Up, Up, and Away, Episode 27, The Giant Turtle Man. And welcome to Up, Up, and Away, the podcast dedicated to anything and everything Superman. I am your host, Mario Benessi. What a time to be alive, folks. San Diego Comic-Con just ended last Sunday, and we have so many awesome things to look forward to in the coming years. And of the many, many things that happen at San Diego Comic-Con, we got a lot of trailers. Well, four, really. Maybe about eight or so, if you really want to count the TV shows. First off, we got another trailer for Suicide Squad. That looks really good. Really sold me on the actress who's playing Amanda Waller. I'm going to be seeing that film next week on Thursday, an advanced screening. So hopefully it's really good. From what I've seen, it looks like it's going to be entertaining, and I'm more than likely going to enjoy it. I'm really excited to see where these characters go and how Batman is tied into all this. I hear that there's a rumor going around with Flash apparently being in there somewhere. I'm not sure, could be a rumor. David Ayer, the director of Suicide Squad, recently just confirmed that Jared Leto's Joker is not, I repeat, is not Jason Todd. Which I don't even know why that was a rumor to begin with. That's a really stupid rumor. It would have been really stupid. But anyway, it looks really good. I'm excited to see it. I'm going to be wearing the shirt that came with the Legion of Collectors box for the Suicide Squad month, so I'm probably going to have a good time next week. We also got a trailer for the upcoming kids series, Justice League Action. This looks like it's kind of aimed a little bit more at kids instead of the adult audience. We have Firestorm and Plastic Man doing their thing. And we still got the main three. We got Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. It looks like it's going to be fun. We got Etrigan in there. Etrigan. That seems like it might be promising. I'm really excited to see how it turns out. Probably going to end up watching it because I like the animation. I like the voice acting that I have seen. It just looks like fun. And that's what we really need right now. We need fun DC Comics stuff. And that's what they've been giving us over the past couple of months. Yeah, we're kind of shifting from the grim and gritty of Dan Didio and Jim Lee's New 52 grimdark nonsense and trying to move into a more Geoff Johns-inspired thing where characters are allowed to have fun and smile and enjoy being heroes. Hopefully that's the tone that they continue to take. And it looks like it's going to be that way based on the trailers for both Justice League and Wonder Woman. Yeah, those were released. If you haven't seen them, check them out, because they look awesome. Wonder Woman's, it excited me the most, honestly. I mean, I'm pumped for Justice League, but Big Blue's not in there yet that we've seen. But the trailer, it was mind-blowing. It has everything that I really want to see. It's got great cinematography. It looks like solid acting, a great-looking cast. I wasn't entirely sold on Chris Pine as Steve Trevor, until I saw the trailer, and he looks like he's gonna do all right by him. I mean, whenever I see Chris Pine, I always think of Captain Kirk from the latest Star Trek films. And while I like him in that, he kind of got typecasted to me, and I'm sure he's that way for a lot of people. So seeing him in a different role outside of the Star Trek franchise is gonna be a little weird, but he sold me on it. So props to him. Wonder Woman looks amazing. The suit, the colors, the action. Oh my god, the action. It's so awesome. That's exactly what I wanted to see. And we got bits of that in Batman v Superman where we see her thrown down with Doomsday. You know, we know this girl can fight. It's pretty much like 300 set in like the early 20th century, which is what I really wanted to see with this film, and they're going with that. And there's bits of humor in there, which is great, because we kind of need a little bit of humor to add some levity to these films. Not that I didn't like the style of the past two films. I liked them just fine. I personally enjoyed the films. But they need to be a little bit more accessible to a wider audience. Justice League, I'm stoked. Totally different tone from Batman v Superman. And yeah, I know it's kind of a reaction to the negative criticisms of the film. It's a lighter tone. There's a little bit more humor in there. It's certainly brighter. The colors are brighter. You can actually see the colors in the costumes. The cinematography is beautiful. And if I'm not mistaken, I think it's still Zack Snyder on this one. But I know it's in better hands because it's got Geoff Johns really kind of leading the team. And then we don't have David Goyer on this, which is great. Because David Goyer is not a very good writer. He's decent at ideas, but his dialogue and his execution are horrendous. His only real claims to fame are like the Blade films and the fluke that was the Dark Knight trilogy. Those were the only ones that he really did decently on. And he didn't even entirely write the Dark Knight trilogy. He had help. So, not the best writer, and certainly not for the DC Cinematic Universe. He doesn't understand the characters, I feel. You know, while I enjoyed the past two installments, there were serious flaws with the characters that they really could have fixed. And it could have been done by a better writer, and they probably wouldn't have gotten as much flack. You know, make the characters a little bit more true to who they actually are, and not try to be so different and taking them out of the confines of the character. Because you can't mess with the basics of these characters. You can do it with characters that are a little bit more obscure, as long as they generally resemble them, but with big characters like Superman, Batman, Spider-Man, you can't really take them out of that box. You have to really keep them relatively true to their character. But this film feels a little bit more like, well, like a Justice League film. It feels like a DC film. So hopefully this change in tone is for the better. Hopefully the plot is strong. Hopefully the character development is strong. The CG looks pretty decent. Aquaman. Jason Momoa is Aquaman. I'm excited to see how that turns out. He looks awesome in that. I wasn't entirely sold on Ezra Miller in Batman v Superman just because he didn't really look like the Flash. And the pictures that I had seen of him from like red carpet events and all that kind of stuff, he didn't look like the Flash kind of character. But the footage that we see of him in the trailer actually really did sell me on him. And I'm actually kind of looking forward to seeing how this Barry Allen is going to play into the film. I want to see who this guy is. And he's probably not going to change too radically from how he is in the comics. But I want to see his take on the character. Because we have already seen Grant Gustin's take on the character. And I like that version of the Flash. I like his portrayal of Barry Allen. But I want to see what Ezra Miller can do. Now, is it kind of confusing that we have two different Barry Allens? Yeah, a little bit. I really think that maybe they should have gone with Wally West. I would have liked to have seen that, but it is what it is. Cyborg, I can honestly take or leave him, and it's not because I dislike the character. It's just, he's never really interested me all that much. He's not a bad character. In fact, he's got some cool stuff that he can do. I don't know, he's never really resonated with me. Now, I like him on the Teen Titans. I liked him in the Teen Titans TV show. He's just never been a character that really struck a chord with me that I had to follow every comic book that he was in. And I know why they have him in there instead of Martian Manhunter. It helps to have, at least in this modern age, a character that is pretty much connected to the internet 24/7. It just becomes helpful, and it's useful. He becomes a useful tool for the Justice League because he can automatically go and check in on like every kind of tweet that's going on in the world, or Facebook status update, or any kind of news article or video that's posted on YouTube. He can access all that in an instant, and I understand why they have him as part of the team. It's just, I've never been too keen on having Cyborg as a Justice League member. I prefer Martian Manhunter. Not a bad character, just not my favorite. But hey, hopefully Ray Fisher, I think that's the guy's name, he looks like he's going to be doing a decent job. He looks all right in the role. He looks like Victor Stone. So, you know, maybe this is the movie that really gets me into Cyborg. Ben Affleck, still killing it. Really like his Bruce Wayne. Really like his Batman. Gal Gadot, love her as Wonder Woman. I cannot praise her performance highly enough. Now, it's been kind of confirmed that Superman's going to be in Justice League. There was a picture released with all of them lined up in their suits in a very bright photo. And Superman's in there. And he's not front and center, but he's in the front row. So we know he's coming back. Obviously, because Henry Cavill's been contracted for several films in the DCCU, but also because he made an appearance at the Comic-Con panel where they announced the Justice League film, or at least showed the trailer. He's coming back. And I'm honestly surprised that there are people that thought he was actually dead for good. Superman is not going anywhere. He's gotta be in the Justice League. Batman can put together the team, which is fine. I don't have a problem with that, but Superman's gotta be the head of the Justice League. That's just how it goes. But I wonder when he's coming back. On a side note, I did manage to get quite a few of the Comic-Con exclusives. I had gotten a tip around Thursday of last week that the Doomsday and Superman False God Funko Pop figures were going to be available for sale at GameStop. So I took my longboard, since I don't currently have a car, and I rode from campus all the way to the nearest GameStop. And lo and behold, they had them. So I picked them up, and they are currently on my shelf, and they look pretty cool. Yeah, like I said in a previous episode, the False God Superman is pretty much just the combination of the head from the BVS Superman figure and the body from the Man of Steel figure. And it's just a silver metallic paint job with the words False God spray painted on his chest. Nothing too fancy. I did reviews of these figures for my YouTube channel. And the other thing I got was a bust based on the designs from the Superman the Animated Series. And it's Clark Kent doing a shirt rip. And I got that at Barnes & Noble. I had also gotten a tip on that. But that ran me about $55. But it's beautiful. And it's limited to, I think, 1,600 pieces. Mine's number 603. But it's wonderfully designed, and this is an exclusive one, obviously. But they have other busts in this series. They have a Superman, they have a Lex Luthor, they have a Supergirl, and I think they're coming out with a Brainiac pretty soon. But it looks awesome. So if you haven't checked out the video for that, check it out. But anyway, let's jump into the meat of this episode. This episode, we're going to be taking a look at Superman's pal, Jimmy Olsen, number 53. It's cover dated June 1961. And the story that we're going to be looking at is The Giant Turtle Man. It's written by Jerry Siegel, penciled by Kurt Swan, and inked by John Forte. On the first page, we have something resembling a splash page. There are two extra panels on the page. But in the splash, we have Jimmy Olsen piling some metal objects, submarines notably, into a volcano, and Superman swooping down to confront him. And there's a yellow box that introduces the story, and it says, "When will impulsive Cub reporter Jimmy Olsen learn to heed the advice of his famed pal Superman? Certainly Jimmy's curiosity has led him often enough into perilous predicaments. However, never before has Jimmy brought upon himself and mankind so huge a calamity as the day he decided to tamper with a colossal forest that turned him into the Giant Turtle Man." It's a sunny morning, and Jimmy Olsen, Clark Kent, and Lois Lane are on a 10-day vacation trip to the West Indies. The ship is docking for a couple of hours, and so Lois and Jimmy are going to go look around. And they ask Clark if he wants to come along. He says, "Nah, I'm just going to sit here and read this novel." So as Jimmy and Lois are walking along the dock, Jimmy notices this giant magnet, and it's lifting tons and tons of metal, and he's really impressed by this. Lois says, "All right, well, you're so impressed by it, you can just stand here and watch it, I guess. I'm gonna go buy some souvenirs." So Jimmy says, "All right, when you're done, meet me on the beach. I want to take some seascape pictures and do a little beach combing." Lois says, "All right, well, I'll be back in an hour." Jimmy walks along the beach, and he comes across this strange chest just lying there on the beach. He opens it, and he sees this strange device, and it's got buttons and knobs and all sorts of switches. So logically, the first thing that Jimmy does is, well, see what it does. He turns the device on and it emits a ray, which makes a snail grow exponentially. The snail just kind of crawls into the sea, and Jimmy deduces that it's an enlarging ray. So he tries it again on a piece of sea sponge, when suddenly Lois Lane arrives and is completely taken aback. It's a giant sea sponge. How would you react? Jimmy tells her that he isn't really sure where it came from or who's created it, but he wants to take it back to the ship and study it, and maybe write a story for the paper. Hours later on the ship, Lois gets word that Clark, quote-unquote, got stranded on the island, and he'll take another boat to Metropolis. Jimmy's moving a table on the deck when all of a sudden the giant magnet from before interferes with his signal watch, causing the signal watch to activate. Meanwhile in space, Superman hears this and he flies back to Earth to see what's going on. Jimmy tells him that it was an accident that his watch went off, and Superman says, "Look, buddy, you probably shouldn't be messing with this enlarging ray. Remember the last time you encountered some sort of ray that changed your size? You became really tiny in the bottle city of Kandor. Don't mess with it." And Jimmy says, "Alright, well, I'm not gonna turn it on or anything. I'm just gonna write a story on it." Superman flies off and says, "Alright, well, be careful. I'm not gonna be here for a couple of days. I have to destroy a shower of fiery planetoids flung into space by solar explosions." At this point, Lois decides to show Jimmy all the souvenirs she bought, and one of the souvenirs is a little turtle. And Jimmy accidentally activates the ray, and the ray goes through the turtle and hits him. So it hits both the turtle and Jimmy at the same time. Both Jimmy and the turtle begin to grow. Except something weird is happening to Jimmy. He's developing a scaly, armor-plated texture. It's kind of like a turtle shell. And he's growing and growing and growing. The turtle kind of just jumps off. He's like, "Hasta la vista. I'm doing my own thing." Jimmy discovers that he can't speak English anymore because science fiction. And Lois tells him, "All right, Jimmy, you need to get off the boat now because you're going to either destroy the ship or we're going to capsize." So Jimmy jumps off the ship and starts swimming away towards Metropolis. Dun, dun, dun. Now, the police in Metropolis have already gotten word of this. They already know there's this giant turtle man on the loose. The police talked amongst themselves and they said, "Alright, well, we better stop this traffic so that nobody gets hurt on this bridge." And wouldn't you know it, the first thing that Jimmy does is start tearing up the bridge. Yeah, he tears up the bridge. He gathers it up and he starts walking away from Metropolis. And he drops the metal into a volcano. Now, later that day, Jimmy's walking around and he spots a fleet of United States submarines. Fortunately, the people on board notice this and they all evacuate as he grabs them and collects them, and then he just throws them into the volcano. And then he starts ripping up the transatlantic cable, which transmits telegraph and telephone messages between Europe and America. He starts grabbing it and he uses it as a lasso to get one last submarine. Now, the submarine opens fire on him, but nothing's affecting Jimmy. He's pretty much become invulnerable. Jimmy starts dragging off that ship, and at the Daily Planet office in Metropolis, Superman's returned. Lois gives him the lowdown on what's been going on, and Superman uses his telescopic vision to see that Jimmy's about to drop the ship into the volcano. So Superman flies off and confronts Jimmy, asking Jimmy why he didn't listen to him. Superman knocks the Turtle Man out with a light tap, and he starts to drag him away before he gets a telepathic message from Lori Lamaris. Lori says, "Superman, Jimmy isn't to blame for all of this destruction. He's being controlled telepathically. Come down to Atlantis, I will let you know what's going on." At the bottom of the sea, Superman is greeted by Lori and a couple other Atlanteans, and they tell him that this is all the work of the Atlantis criminal named Gojo. That's spelled G-O-X-O, so I really hope that's the correct pronunciation of that. Lori tells Superman to use his X-ray vision to see Gojo in his laboratory giving Jimmy messages mentally. Then Lori tells him the whole deal with Gojo. She says that Gojo was to be exiled for the next year to the surface world, but he pretty much started preparing for that, and they decided that, well, it's probably not the best idea to do that now because he's had time to prepare for it. So in their infinite wisdom, they gave him a laboratory, and out of that laboratory, he invented a growth ray. So Gojo released the growth ray to the surface, with his plan being that if anybody were to use this and grow themselves, then Gojo would be able to take control of them. Now, Gojo knew that there was some sort of treasure on the island, And so monitoring the Earth, he also knew that a geology expedition was going to explore the island's volcano. So Gojo wanted the island covered with molten steel so that the geologists would not be able to find the treasure. Superman takes Jimmy up to the surface and back to the Fortress of Solitude, where he uses Brainiac's shrinking ray and he shrinks him back to normal size. Jimmy is kind of confused as to what's just happened. Honestly, would have the same question. And Superman shows Jimmy what Gojo's plan was, including the treasure. So Superman says that he's going to clean up the mess that Jimmy made and then destroy the growth ray. And that's the end of the issue. There's not a lot to this issue. It's still really fun, though. The art is really the big selling point, and I think that's really just because Kurt Swan is on this. There are some fantastic panels of Superman doing his thing, especially in the beginning of the issue. We get some wonderful images. You know, very, very well done. But, of course, that's Kurt Swan. I expect nothing less. The colors are really good, and, I mean, this definitely feels like a Jerry Siegel story, and I like that. Kind of questioning why Jimmy's first reaction to finding a strange device on an island is to see what it does instead of calling for Superman, but that's just me. And Gojo isn't really given a lot of screen time. He's really only given, like, two thought bubbles, and that's it. And from what I understand, this is his only appearance. So, I mean, he didn't need to be fully fleshed out, but, you know, he didn't have much character or motive, really. His whole thing was, I just want to get treasure. That's it. That's all I want. Just treasure. There wasn't much to him. So I feel like that could have been fleshed out a little bit. It's a very short story. It's only 8 pages long. And to be fair, that's about the average page length for a Silver Age story, because they had several stories in each issue, which is fine. It knew what it needed to be, and for the most part, it delivered. It's still fun, and it's a very iconic issue. I'm sure if you've looked at comic book covers for iconic Superman issues, you've very, very, very likely seen this one. In fact, they even do an animated tribute to this in the Superman 75th anniversary short that they did. If you want to read this story, you can go ahead and read it in Superman in the 60s. That's where I read mine out of. And, yeah. So I'm going to take a quick break, and then we're going to look at Adventures of Superman, go into the Essential Superman Encyclopedia, and then close out the episode.
Hello, boys and girls. It's your dear old Uncle Joker. We've got an internet access here in Arkham, so I'm doing a little browsing. Lolcats, lolcats, porn, lolcats. What's this? Bailey's Batman Podcast, a bi-weekly podcast devoted to everything Dark Knight Detective. Well, Michael Bailey, where's Bailey's Joker podcast, eh? We'll see about that. Harley, get our things. We're going to Georgia.
Hey everyone, Michael Bailey here, asking you to check out my bi-weekly internet radio show, Bailey's Batman Podcast. Or at least I'm asking you to check it out while you still can, until the Joker shows up on my doorstep. Bailey's Batman Podcast is a hodgepodge type show where I discuss all aspects of the Dark Knight's history. Comics, movies, animation, even trading cards and action figures. Everything Batman related is fair game, and yes, that does include the villains, which includes the Joker. So he won't kill me. New episodes drop every other Tuesday over at www.baileysbatmanpodcast.com. The site also has links to the iTunes page, the RSS feed, my Twitter handle if you're into the social media thing, and the Bailey's Batman Podcast Facebook page. Bailey's Batman Podcast is a proud member of the Batman Podcast Connection, which you can find at batmanpodcastconnection.wordpress.com. I really hope that's the UPS guy. Why can't I have Batman in my basement?
Alright, this episode's Adventures of Superman episode is entitled Rescue. The synopsis is also taken from the Superman homepage, again, written by James Lance. The original broadcast date is November 14th, 1952, written by Monroe Manning, directed by Tommy Carr, starring George Reeves as Clark Kent / Superman, Phyllis Coates as Lois Lane, Housley Stevenson as Bob Pulgassy, Fred Sherman as Inspector Sims, Ray Bennett as Stan Hacker, Edmund Cobb as Leif Reiser, and Milton Keeby as Harry Hansen. Pop Pogazzi has been working in the same coal mine in Carbide, Pennsylvania for nearly a decade. Mine Inspector Sims, however, has been forced to condemn Pop Shaft due to unsafe conditions. This angers the elderly man greatly. In spite of Sims' orders, Pop intends to dig for more of the rock. What he might find could put him in serious danger. On the way to the Washington, D.C. offices of the Daily Planet, reporter Clark Kent has dropped colleague Lois Lane off in Carbide, where she is covering a story on the coal mining industry. Meanwhile, Stan Hacker has decided against going into Pop's tunnels with the elderly worker to dig for more coke. An angry and stubborn Pop goes inside to dig without Steve, only to become trapped in a cave-in. Steve blows the disaster whistle, which is heard by Sims as he explains operations to Lois. An avalanche of rock has pinned Pop inside, and Sims and his crew must wait for a rescue squad before even thinking of getting him out. Unfortunately, it is unknown how long the old prospector has. He could die while waiting to be rescued. Lois has phoned in the story of the tunnel cave into the Daily Planet. Meanwhile, Sims' crew will have to create another path in order to get to Pop. This doesn't satisfy Lois. She intends to get the elderly miner out sooner than Sims. In Washington, Clark has had no luck in getting information for his story. He is unaware of what's going on in Carbide. The situation there could use his help as Superman. Lois, in miner's clothing, has just entered Pop's mine. She manages to get to the tunnel where he is trapped, but in trying to free the elderly prospector, she has caused another cave-in. Now, Lois is stranded inside with Pop. To make matters worse, the rock from the second avalanche has blocked any air from getting into the shaft. Pop and Lois could die of suffocation if they are not rescued in time. News of Lois' predicament has reached Washington. Unfortunately, Clark left for Carbide before the teletypes finished the bulletin. Editions of the Daily Planet telling of the disaster arrive mere seconds after the mild-mannered reporter leaves the city. The radio has even broadcast word of the incident, but Kent is unable to hear it because he is repairing his car. The roar of the engine drowns out the sound of the announcer's voice. Superman may not be able to save Pop and Lois before it's too late for them. Sims' men have nearly reached the tunnel in which Lois and Pop are stranded. Unfortunately, gas has entered into the shaft, making it impossible for the rescue crews to dig any further. There seems to be no hope for Lois and Pop's survival. Clark Kent has finally arrived at Pop's mine and is now aware of the danger to help Lois and Pop's lives. He changes into Superman to dig them out of rock. As he leads them out of the shaft, a dirty cloth ignites, causing an explosion. The Man of Steel holds up the tunnel entrance while Lois and Pop escape mere moments before the mine caves in yet again. Seeing that Pop and Lois are safe, Superman leaves to resume his guise of Clark Kent. Kent is now ready to take Lois back to Metropolis when she says, "Oh, Clark, Superman finally took me out." With those words, Clark cannot help but smile as Lois walks away to change into her normal clothes. This was just an okay episode. There's really not a lot to it, and it's not bad. Really, it isn't. The performances are just fine, and we get to see Lois be very heroic in this episode, sacrificing her own life, or at least putting her own life in danger to help somebody else. But there's just not a lot going on in this episode, and honestly, the entire episode could have been avoided if this Pop character weren't so darn stubborn. The evidence was right there that his mind wasn't up to code, that it should have been condemned. If he had not decided to go mining, none of this would have happened. There's not really a lot I can say about this. It's not bad, but it's definitely one of the weaker episodes. And honestly, I don't really remember it. There are a lot of episodes that I do remember, and I have a relatively good memory of things. You know, but this one, there's just not too much memorable about it. I mean, we get to see Superman save people from a mine, but we also saw him do that in the 1948 serial. So it kind of feels like retreading a familiar ground. And, you know, there's no villain to really fight. It's just Superman rescuing people from a cave-in. If you really like the show, go ahead and watch it. If you want to see George Reeves doing his thing, go ahead and watch it. Probably just say skip this one. It's not bad, but It's kind of forgettable. Alright, let's take a look at the Essential Superman Encyclopedia. Aether. An entity in the universe of the pre-First Crisis Earth-1 believed to be the creator of that reality's Phantom Zone, its mind physically manifesting itself as a massive gem-like form, an amalgam of all the souls it had absorbed. Kryptonian wizard named Tholkar regarded himself as one of Aether's disciples and described it as a god that causes existence and establishes its own physical laws. The Phantom Zone itself, Tholkar claimed, was the interface of its universe and that of Krypton and Earth, the outmost limits of its ability to abstract. Seeking to escape from the zone, Superman and Quetzal were forced to penetrate the crystal mind to forcibly enter Aether and endure its attempts to absorb their souls into itself. Tragically, Aether successfully devoured Quetzal, the Phantom Zone number 3 through 4, March-April 1982, but Aether ultimately doomed itself when it took the soul of the fifth-dimensional Mr. Mixture Spitalik. It was like godhood by committee till he absorbed me, the imp declared. Now in control of the most powerful force in the universe, Mixture Spitalik added the souls of the escaped Phantom Zone criminals to Aether's crystal brain and returned to his own dimension to wreak havoc. That's in DC Comics Presents number 97, September 1986. I'm probably going to get around to covering that. I really do like the Phantom Zone story. Agamemnon. The mythological king of Mycenae in ancient Greece and commander-in-chief in the war to recover Helen from the Trojans. Superman met Agamemnon while traveling back in time to ancient Greece and helped him finish building the Trojan horse. That's in Superman Volume 1, number 53, July-August 1948. See, who says comics can't be educational? Giving you a little bit of Greek mythology there. The Agenda. A secret parliamentary organization dedicated to creating and deploying clone armies. Superboy, Volume 5, Number 32, October 1993. Many of the Agenda's operations were directed against Superboy and coordinated by a group of unnamed directors. Among their agents was Amanda Spence, daughter of the late Project Cadmus director Paul Westfield, whose death Spence blamed on Connell. And before we get to the super fact and the super quote, I just realized that I had a couple of emails for the podcast. So let's go ahead and read one of these, and then I'll read the next couple as the shows come out. But this is from Mr. Dave McElveny. Hi Dave, how you doing? Says, greetings, Mario. I just got back from a trip and am catching up on my podcast listening. I try to limit my internet interaction while on vacation. And I just listened to this episode. This is for episode 22, by the way. I think I mentioned in a previous email that, originally, I was not a fan of John Byrne's Man of Steel. But I have, over time, come to like much of Byrne's work more than I did at the time. Even at the time it came out, though, I very much enjoyed that third issue, introducing Superman and Batman to each other. I personally prefer the Silver Age World's Finest Heroes, who are each other's best friends, but Byrne's story here was quite well written and developed. On the Adventures of Superman, I agree with you that, especially in the early seasons, Clark Kent certainly has more screen time than Superman. I suspect that, in part, that's because Superman requires more special effects, such as they were in 1950s TV. Although on the old Superman radio show, there was generally more Clark than of Superman, and, on radio, most of the special effects take place in the listeners' minds, so they are not at all expensive. I'm looking forward to hearing Up, Up, and Away more frequently, but don't fret if real life sometimes causes variation in your proposed weekly schedule. That happens, and I trust your listeners will understand. Live long and prosper, Dave McElveny. P.S. I forgot to add in my email. Thanks for introducing me to the song Brainiac's Daughter. I hadn't heard that before, and I enjoyed it. You're welcome, Dave. That's also a tune that I just kind of really dig. It's very peppy, very fun, something that comics need a little bit more of. I really do appreciate when people write into the show. It shows me that people are listening, and yeah, I can get the numbers and stuff, but I really like having that interaction with the community. It just makes it that much more special, you know? So this episode's super fact. Did you know that one of Clark Kent's favorite snacks is a jumbo pretzel with mustard? I'm right there with you, Clark. I'm right there with you. And this episode's super quote comes from a song written by the late, great Jim Croce, one of my favorite folk singers of all time. I play a lot of his stuff on guitar. It just speaks to me. I love his music. But this comes from his song, You Don't Mess Around With Jim, from the album of the same name. You don't tug on Superman's cape, you don't spit into the wind, you don't pull the mask off the old Lone Ranger, and you don't mess around with Jim. Good night, folks.
Lois Lane.
It's Superman!
Superman, Superman, the guy with the terrific muscle. Superman, Superman, his blood is one big red corpuscle. Superman, Superman, he's always in perfect condition. No sniffles, no sneezes, no germs, no diseases. What a man, what a man, what a man. Superman, Superman, he's virtuous, handsome, and able. Superman, Superman, a mixture of Samson and Gable. Superman, Superman, it's strange, but he isn't romantic. He'd much rather shoulder a 50-ton boulder. What a man, what a man, what a man. His costume is simple but daring. Superman, Superman, no intricate clothes is he wearing. Superman, Superman, his problem of dressing is easy. No spenders, no buttons, no zippers, no nothings. What a man, what a man, what a man. Superman, Superman, no bullet is made that can scratch him. Superman, Superman, just show him a crook and he'll catch him. Superman, Superman, compared to him Popeye is puny. He doesn't need spinach to fight to the finish. What a man, what a man, Superman.
For more Up, Up, and Away, visit www.upupandaway.podomatic.com. The show and other Superman-related goodies can be found on Facebook by searching Up, Up, and Away Podcast, and Mario can be contacted through email at mbenesi94@yahoo.com. That's B as in boy, E-N-N-E-S-E. Up, Up, and Away is a proud member of the Superman Podcast Network, and Superman and all related images are property of DC Comics and Warner Brothers Entertainment. All images and music are property of their respective owners, and no infringement is intended. This is a non-profit fan podcast. Superman was created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster.